Prepare for a truth revolution.
Actually, you can prove God exists.
Questioning tradition, because what you've been taught isn't always true.
The truth will set you free.
Hey, the truth will set you free. Welcome to the Truth Revolution.
It is Truth Revolution, and Happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day to all you mothers out there. You foster mothers, biological mothers, birth mothers, happy mothers, sad mothers, single mothers, married mothers.
Everybody has a mother.
That's right.
Yeah, and everybody better be good to their mother.
Yes.
Every day, not just today.
So anyway, today, in honor of Mother's Day, we're talking about historical biblical reliability of the Gospels.
Right.
Meaning there's these four books in the Bible, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and are they historical or are they fake? I mean, do they have historical problems?
Right.
And this is kind of continuing from last week. Last week we talked about whether or not the Gospels were reliable as well. We found out a number of things. We talked about our archaeology and a man who they had found was crucified, and it was the same as the Bible Gospels describe.
Right.
And it's pretty neat stuff. We also talked about the pools at Bethsaida and Siloam. We realized those were real.
Mm-hmm.
And today we're going to actually take a look at some of the non-Christian writings.
Really?
Yeah.
That's great, because if non-Christian writings corroborate with the Christian writings, then that's even more evidence.
Yeah.
Now, we're all about evidence here.
That's exactly. We're all about evidence. But here's the deal. Now, what you have to think about is, imagine back then the Roman Empire.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this Roman Empire extended far and wide. I mean, it was vast.
Yeah. Most of the known earth at the time.
Right. And what happened with Christianity, it was founded in a small part of Palestine by a very small number of people. You know, Jesus, his 12 disciples, and some other smattering of followers. So you have this very tiny religious sect among the world's biggest, largest empire.
Right.
And so you first we have to set our expectations right. What should we expect to find in historical writings? And really, what should you imagine in the United States? There is a church with one guy who claims to be God, and he's got a few followers, 12.
Right.
You know, and they don't really do anything wrong. You know, the religious people don't really like him because he's challenging their traditions and stuff. But as far as the government's concerned, he hasn't done anything wrong.
Right.
Until he gets accused of some stuff, and finally he gets executed for a crime. Now, how much is the United States going to write about this man as a claiming to be God?
Probably not a lot.
Yeah, probably nothing. They don't give a crap. I mean, they don't care.
A blip on the radar there.
Right. And so when we're looking at Roman writings about Jesus, we shouldn't expect to find anything at all, really.
Right.
But we do. And what we're trying to do here is corroborate, hey, yeah, Jesus has existed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's the real deal. So that's basically what we're trying to find. First one I want to talk about is a guy named Tacitus, okay?
Okay.
Tacitus was a first century historian. He lived about 55 AD is when he was born. So right after Jesus. Now, he penned a number of words about Christ in his report regarding Christians and their involvement in the Roman fires. Because the Christians were accused of the Roman fires back in the day.
Yeah. Oh, that was Nero that put the accusation on them, right?
Yeah, I think so. He was trying to blame them instead of himself. So anyway, he obviously didn't believe that Jesus had risen from the dead, this Tacitus, who was a Roman historian, since he refers to Jesus' resurrection as, quote, superstition. His writing contains references to Christians named after Christus, which is the Latin word for Christ, who suffered, quote, the extreme penalty under Pontius Pilate during the reign of Tiberius. So now the superstition had started in Judea and made its way to Rome, was most likely the resurrection of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. As the scriptures clearly explain, this was an early belief of the Christians that Jesus rose from the dead, and Tacitus has established this in his writings. I mean, he says very early on, the Christians believe in this superstition that Jesus rose from the dead.
Right.
And so what we're showing here is that this concept about Jesus being God and rising from the dead wasn't something that came to be over time.
Right, because there's a lot of people, there are sections of people out there that refute refute the fact, well, they didn't say Jesus rose from the dead right away.
Right. People say
they made that up later.
You know, any type of legend could creep in over 1,000 right. years. It's been 2,000 years since Jesus rose mm-hmm. from the dead. And, you know, they'll say, they'll find writings, you know, from the years 500, 1,000. And they'll say, see, here they believe Jesus rose from the dead, but I don't know before that.
Right.
Well, here you have Tacitus, a non-Christian Roman historian who says, yeah, the Christians believed in this crazy superstition, which right. was Jesus raising from the dead, and that they were going to be raised from the dead. Now, you review what's written and consider him to be one of the most accurate historians to have written ancient documents.
Uh-huh.
We can conclude several more things about the Bible's claims. All right. One, Jesus was put to death by Pontius Pilate. I mean, he records that as a historian. The second thing is that it's also as described in Luke chapter 23, just as Luke described it. We also know Christianity broke out, as Tacitus puts it, that Tacitus says it broke out, meaning it grew really fast, spread quickly to Rome. And so, you know, we've corroborated a number of historical right. events here in just one guy's writings. Now, most historians would agree with this, and as would those who followed the apostles' missionary journeys from the New Testament, that Christianity spread quickly and it caught on fairly fast.
Right. Well, and, you know, since a lot of people say, well, you know, this doesn't prove that he rose from the dead.
Well, no, this doesn't prove that he
rose
from the dead.
But that's not what we're out to prove.
No, right now, by the way, we have, I think, proven he
yes,
rose from the dead.
Definitely.
In previous shows. Mm-hmm. But what we're trying to prove right now is that this him rising from the dead wasn't something that, you know, a belief that came about hundreds of years
right.
later.
Right.
It was something that was believed right away.
And so it's another piece of evidence that perhaps the Gospels are reliable historically.
Exactly. So we're not talking about like books that are full of mythology mm-hmm. here. We're talking about historical accuracy. You know, last week we did that show. We're doing the other one here. And I've got in front of me a book, The Historical Reliability of the Gospels by Craig Blomberg. Uh-huh. And, you know, this book is, I mean, it's huge. Let me just flip through the pages here. I mean, we're talking 258 pages of, and this is heady in deep depth stuff here.
Right.
About how the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, are reliable historically. So it's kind of a big
books.
Deal. What?
You read books? That's great.
Yeah, I found it's a good way to actually gather information. I tried just listening to our radio show, but I already knew most of that stuff.
Nice.
I'm thinking right now, maybe let's go ahead and take a break. Let's do our Bible contradiction this morning.
Bible contradiction.
All right, today's Bible contradiction comes from the Old Testament.
We're going old school.
Yes. Want to know whether God is actually happy with what he made or not? Genesis. And his heart was deeply troubled.
Okay.
Well, earlier in Genesis 1:31, it said God saw all that he had made, and it was very good. And there was evening, and then there was morning, the sixth day. Which is it?
So was he?
Is he hating on us or is he loving us?
Okay, well, our list of Bible contradiction rules,
mm-hmm.
rules to follow when you read the Bible. Here's a mistake number, number eight by Norman Geisler.
You read quick.
Assuming that a partial report is a false report.
Uh-huh.
All right, just because you give a partial report doesn't mean it's wrong. If I were to say that Dave and Jeff were in the radio studio this morning, mm-hmm. that would be true.
That would be true.
Although there's actually four people in here this morning. Mm-hmm. So I just give a partial report. So, you know, saying that God was happy and also that God was sad. Yeah, I'm only giving partial reports there. It looks like a contradiction, but you'd have to read more to figure out what's
right.
really going
it's all
on.
About context.
Right, which is, of course, my list, mistake number 20, is not reading the Bible.
Right, just taking select passages.
Yeah, oh, it drives me nuts, uh-huh. man. Let me just read for you in context what is happening in Genesis chapter 6. Because okay. Genesis 1, where God was happy, it was that he had made everything. God made mm-hmm. the earth, God made humankind, and he was really happy. It was like perfect. It was like opening a brand new present. You right. know, everything's just right. But in Genesis 6, something changes. It says in verse 1, it says, when human beings began to increase on the earth and daughters were born to them, and then verse 2 describes something that God was not happy about. Mm-hmm. It says, then the Lord said, my spirit will not contend with humans forever. And then finally in verse 5, or it says, the Lord saw how great the wickedness of the human race had become.
Right.
Oh. And then verse 6, the Lord had regretted and made human beings.
So we're the ones that changed, not God.
We changed, right. Not God. God, it was us. It wasn't right. You. It was us. We've changed.
It's not me. It's you.
So that's why God was so upset. That's why he was happy at the beginning and then mad later. This is not a contradiction.
Right.
This is simply God responding to us acting differently.
I think you nailed that one.
Yeah, so that's the answer for our Bible contradiction today.
Bible contradiction.
I like those Bible contradictions.
You do?
Yep. I set them up and you knock them down. That's great.
I like them too. All right. Hey, you know, want anyone listening, go ahead and head over to truthrevolution.tv. Mm-hmm. That's our website. And if you want, you can ask questions. You can pose challenges. If you have any questions about how the Bible works, or maybe you found something that you think contradicts science
right.
or itself or history or whatever.
Right. We totally welcome any and all challenges.
Because that's right.
We're all about truth. And like I was telling a friend of my sister's this past week was, you know, if you can prove my religion wrong to me without a doubt, I challenge you to do that because mm-hmm. I want to be all about truth. Wouldn't you want to be all about truth?
That's right. I mean, if you could prove that Jesus hadn't risen from the dead or that God doesn't exist, mm-hmm. hey, you know what? I'm not doing this. This right. is a waste of my time.
Right.
But I think we can prove Jesus rose from the dead, and I think we can prove God exists, and that's why we do this.
We've been doing it every week.
So, So check out truthrevolution.tv. That's our website, and it's full of great information. We've been getting a lot of hits on that lately, Dave.
Right on.
So lots of people listen to the show. Pretty neat stuff. Also on there, you can donate to the show if you'd like so. Mm-hmm. Like to. Right now, I think the donation sheet on the front page says 99 cents.
Right
so
on.
So if you'd like to donate 99 cents to our show, it's
let
as
me tell
cheap
you,
as an iTunes song.
That's a bargain.
That's a bargain. I mean, hey, $1. You'd have to pay more than that for a song on iTunes, or $1.29 now for the new ones. So, I mean, hey, you could listen to one new song, or you could hear us every week.
For half an hour
so,
a week.
That's right.
That's great.
And if we have to, we'll sing and dance for you.
Okay.
You can't see his dancing, but Dave will sing. All right, anyway, Suetonius, let's talk about historical reliability of the Gospels again.
Uh-huh.
And I hope I'm not bothering you guys while you're looking at truthrevolution.tv. Of course, I know you all went there, and I'm going to go ahead and continue to talk about Suetonius.
Let's do that.
All right, Gaius Suetonius Tranquillus was a Roman historian who mentions Christ, and he mentions Christians. His passages are notably shorter than other historians, but they provide some really interesting insight into biblical claims, all right? Suetonius was the chief secretary of Emperor Hadrian,
okay?
So about AD 117. So, you know, 50, 60 years after Tacitus.
So he's a government official.
He is a government official of the Roman Empire. And it's important to note that he had access to the imperial records since
right.
he was a Roman historian. The first reference occurs in the section on Emperor Claudius, who lived about AD 41. In one of his entrances about Claudius, Suetonius says, quote, because the Jews at Rome caused continuous disturbances at the instigation of Crestus, which is Christ, he expelled them from the city. Now, here's what's interesting. This corresponds exactly with Acts 18:2, which says, quote, there he met a Jew named Aquila, a native of Pontus, who had recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because Claudius had ordered all the Jews to leave Rome. Now, see, initially you could read that in the Bible and people would say, oh, this is stupid.
Right.
A Roman Empire ordering all the Jews to leave Rome? We don't
right.
have any evidence of that. The Bible's just crazy. Well, here again we find, look, it's just lined up exactly with what the Bible said. And I
right.
know this is we're talking about the Gospels, and this is Acts. It's not quite the Gospels, but it's
right.
the book right after
the
Gospels.
I mean,
it's virtually connected.
It's the extended Gospels.
Yeah,
it's the extended version.
That's right.
It's like the director's cut.
Yeah, it's like part B of the book of Luke, really.
Right.
So, anyway, you know, so you see here Suetonius is just lined up exactly with what the Bible says, a historical event that initially would sound crazy,
mm-hmm.
but is actually fairly accurate. Not fairly accurate. It is perfectly accurate.
It's crazy Christians getting kicked out of cities and stuff.
Yeah, all the Jews, not just the Christians.
Yeah.
But
well,
the Christians had to go
one
too.
One bad apple.
So All right, let's talk about Thallus. Now, this is another historian who wrote during the time closest to the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ, sometime around the time of A.D. 52.
Okay.
None of his works are, now I'm quoting another author here, none of his works are extant, though a few fragmentic citations are preserved by other writers. One such writer is Julius Africanus, in about 221, who quotes Thallus in a discussion of the darkness which followed the crucifixion of Christ.
Okay.
Now, listen, this is really cool, okay? Because you have this event when Jesus is crucified. It says, and darkness fell over all the
right.
land. Matthew 27 says the darkness came during Jesus' crucifixion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a miracle, we would say.
Right.
Okay, we would say that this is incredible. This is not real. This is just a claim the Bible made. Well, I guess we wouldn't really call it a miracle, but it would easily be a fascinating coincidence.
Yeah, yeah. At the very least, it's a fascinating coincidence.
Right. For skeptics and historians and Christians, this is an extremely big deal. And Thallus, this Roman historian, corroborates that there was darkness that fell over the land during this time.
Interesting.
So we have a non-Christian Roman historian claiming the same thing. So we've got Tacitus, we've got Suetonius, we've got Thallus, all these historians from the ancient Rome who were not Christians claiming and showing us that the Bible is accurate in what it records and represents.
That's awesome.
So I got another one for you, though. Right? I'm not done, Dave.
He's not done.
All right. Pliny the Younger. He was a Roman author and administrator in Asia Minor. Uh-huh. From his writings and judgments, we can see that Christ was worshipped, quote, Christ was worshipped as a deity by early believers, most likely because of the resurrection, which he refers to as excessive superstition.
Nice.
All right. Again, he's showing that this is what the Christians believed very early on. This
it's
is
not just superstition, it's excessive.
Excessive superstition. So, hey, check us out, truthrevolution.tv. We're going to take a small break. We're going to be right back. I have some information about a planet possibly supporting life I saw in an article this
Great.
Week. Going to hit that really quick. And then we've got a bunch more evidence and proof that the Gospels are reliable historically. So check us out, truthrevolution.tv. If you can donate 99 cents, go for it. If you got a question or a comment, hit us up there. We'll see you on the other end of this break when we're looking at historical reliability of the Gospels. We're still bringing it back. Bible is accurate.
Truth Revolution.
And we are back. Truth Revolution. We contend that you don't have to push your brain aside to have a little faith.
That's right.
Have a lot of faith.
You can think about stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You can ask questions. So, hey, we are talking about the reliability of the Gospels. Matthew,
right.
Mark, Luke, and John, four books in the New Testament. Are they true historically? And the answer we're finding is yeah. And we've
Pretty
got
much.
A lot of information. We're not going to have time for all the information, but... because I want to hit something. We saw an article a couple weeks ago that says, astronomers find new planet capable of supporting life. That's
right.
The headline. And I got to tell you, man, we did a show, a couple shows, about astronomy and astrophysics and the possibility of finding life
right.
on other planets. And so... the subtitle here is astronomers have discovered their holy grail,
yeah.
a planet capable of supporting life outside our solar system.
Well, stuff like that's exciting.
It is exciting.
Because, planet's getting crowded, need a little bit of elbow room.
That's right.
Hey, maybe one of these days we'll be able to move.
You know what? The other day I was writing an article for a magazine. They wanted me to write about our church and all the technology we use and how we do things. And and in there, the one I mentioned something about talking about astrophysics.
Uh-huh.
And the editor of the magazine said, I want to know, do you think there's life on other planets? And I said, mathematically, I don't think the math says there is, but I hope my math is wrong.
Right.
Because life can occur wherever God puts it, is what we say. But let me just show you this article. It says, the planet lies in what they describe as the habitable zone, neither too near its sun to dry out or too far away, which freezes it, which we've
right.
talked about in the show,
yeah,
the habitable
it's where
zone.
Where we're at in our solar system.
Exactly right. And it says, the discovery could help answer the question of whether we're alone in the universe. Scientists have found the planet, Galaxy 667 CC, orbiting around a red dwarf star 22 light years away from Earth. Now, reanalyzing the data from the European Southern Observatory, the astronomers found Gliese 667cc is a solid planet with roughly 4.5 times the mass of Earth.
Oh, even more room.
Yeah.
Right.
But it receives 10% less light from its red dwarf star than the Earth gets from the sun. Now, here's... I'm sorry, but it kind of drives me nuts here. Okay, they're saying, new planet capable of supporting life.
Right.
Okay. Let me explain this to you, Dave.
Does it have a 7-Eleven? If it has a 7-Eleven, I'm great.
They found two elements capable of supporting life.
Oh.
It's in the habitable zone, and it's a solid planet.
So no Walmart, huh?
Probably not yet. Probably not yet. But I'm betting Subway or McDonald's would probably beat Walmart there anyway.
Right on.
But, you know, there are hundreds of elements necessary to be able to sustain complex life.
And we've discussed this, like you said,
in previous shows. So I just wanted to bring up this article because it was really kind of fascinating stuff that, you know, we need to talk about. It says astronomers are still hailing the planet as the holy grail of discoveries, as 20 years ago scientists were still arguing about the existence of planets beyond our solar system, which is true. You know, we are now finding planets outside our solar system.
Right.
But it says it's the holy grail. I don't know why it's the holy grail. They have found four other planets in habitable zones.
Well, there was four holy grails, right?
Right. So, but they've found something like over 700 or 800 planets outside our solar system. Mm-hmm. And only four of those are in their sun's habitable zone. Mm-hmm. But, you know, just because it's in a habitable zone does not mean it's going to support life.
I mean, even though you do need that.
Yeah, you do need that. You know. So it's a good step. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's like, wow, it's in the habitable zone. It looks like it's a solid planet. This is really good. Now, if we can qualify and meet the other 200 requirements.
Right.
You know.
Right. I mean, I can understand the excitement because, I mean, you're looking in space, which is pretty much a lot of empty space, you know, not a lot of planets out there to look for. But if you're looking for other planets and you find something that gives you a good start, it's not Pluto, it's not a chunk
of ice.
That's
right.
So
anyway, should we head back to the historical biblical reliability?
Let's do.
All right, of the Gospels. And, you know, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, do they match with early history or are they way out there? Well, we've already detailed a number of things last week and this week. Gary Habermas, who is a theologian, a great philosopher, he says there are well over a dozen non-Christian sources from ancient history that mention Jesus. So, I mean, this is a kind of a big deal. We've got lots of corroborating evidence here. Some people argue that if Jesus really existed, the way the Bible describes, there'd be much more evidence, you know. If a man did miracles and started a religious sect, many historians record a lot of information about him. Well, not necessarily. Like we talked about at the beginning of the show, just a small amount of information from the sources that exist show exactly what Christianity was at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Very humble, small sect.
Right.
It was in a remote location of Palestine, in a very small part of the Roman Empire, and almost nobody knew about them at the very beginning.
Right.
So there was no reason for the Roman historians to write about them until a little bit later. And they did write about them, which is the most astonishing part, that we have all these guys like Thallus and Pliny the Younger and Suetonius and Tacitus writing.
See, and you're not even mentioning my favorite one.
Which one?
Josephus.
Josephus. I thought I'd skip over some of the bigger, more famous ones. There's a couple out there that are really, really big and really cool. But I skipped over some of those just because I was tired of talking about them. I never get to talk about Suetonius, okay?
Right.
Leave me alone.
Right.
All right, so anyway. But, you know, I mentioned this book, The Historical Reliability of the Gospels.
Uh-huh.
And I just want to read a couple things out of here because there's not only Roman and non-Christian references to Jesus, there's also ancient Jewish traditions, rabbinic traditions that mention Jesus.
So basically we've got one, two, and now a third type of corroboration.
Right. We've got a whole other category here. In the Palestinian Talmud, which is a third century writing, the Rabbi Abihu says, if a man says to you, I am God, he is a liar. If he says, I am a son of man, he will regret it. If he says, I go up to heaven, he has said it, but he will not be able to do it. Now, What's interesting about this is that it's in the 3rd century. He doesn't necessarily give any firsthand knowledge about Jesus' life, but he quotes the three major claims right. that Jesus made about himself, and these claims are not like common phrases. These are not things that people say all the time around that around his era.
Well, it was dangerous to say things like that back
right.
then.
And so he is looking at the Christian culture, and he says, hey, I just want everyone to know, if someone says these three things, which are the three things Jesus claimed, then he's a liar, he's a fake. You know, unlike modern skeptics, and let me quote Craig Blomberg here, unlike modern skeptics, the rabbis apparently never deny that Jesus made such claims for himself. Instead, they called one who made such claims a liar.
Right.
You get the point with that?
Mm-hmm. Got it.
In the 3rd century, the Jewish leaders who knew very well about the Christianity, they didn't say, no, Jesus never existed, you guys are crazy.
Right.
They said,
he's a liar.
He did exist. He did claim to be God, but he's lying.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, they're refuting it from a different perspective.
Right, exactly.
Instead of saying, well, he never existed, so therefore your religion is foundless, they're saying, well, he's a liar, so your religion is foundless.
Right. And so, you know, of course, we would disagree that he was a liar.
Right.
But the point here is to show that our gospels were reliably historical.
Well, otherwise, people wouldn't have been talking about it.
Right. That's right. They were reliable historically. So it's pretty interesting information. Other rabbinic traditions refer to Jesus very directly. In the 5th century Babylonian Talmud, a rebellious disciple is compared to one who, quote, publicly burns his food like Jesus of Nazareth.
Nice.
Okay? So, you know, they're using Jesus as, quote, the bad example. The apple that fell far from the tree.
Publicly burn his food?
Yeah. A few columns on, the claim is made that Jesus the Nazarene practiced magic and led Israel astray.
Great.
But what's interesting, though, man, is this is not that far after Jesus lived.
Right.
And you find official Jewish writings saying Jesus practiced magic and led Israel astray.
Right.
Now, I'm sorry, but there are a lot of people today saying things like, you know, Jesus didn't exist. The Gospels are full of historical errors. We're not finding historical errors, are we? We are not finding any historical errors. Furthermore, we're not only finding that Jesus did exist, but that there's lots of evidence for Jesus' life, even right. outside of the Bible. Mm-hmm. Suetonius, Thallus, all sorts of writers, plus these rabbinic traditions that if anybody wanted to say Jesus didn't exist, it would be the Jews. They
That's
really
true.
Wouldn't have wanted him to exist. But instead of saying he didn't exist, they're trying to be as honest as they can and say, well, he did exist, but he's a liar.
Yeah, and he led people astray.
And this guy, what's interesting is, did you remember what he said? He said Jesus practiced magic. Now, why would he
miracles.
Be saying...
What?
Thank you.
Miracles.
You're spot on today. Miracles. I mean, he's saying Jesus practiced magic because they know of all the amazing things that Jesus did and everyone that claims to have seen them. They're
right.
not denying what Jesus did. He's just saying there's some kind of magic that he used.
Well, not only that, if they were to claim, like, well, he did perform miracles, that would kind of lend credence to the fact that he was who he said he was, so they turned it around and said, well, it was magic.
Exactly. So, you know, in these rabbinic traditions, Christian claims aren't denied. They're just given a different interpretation. Oh, man, we're almost out of time for today, but I'm gonna throw one more thing at you really briefly. In several places, Jesus is called Jesus ben Pandera. It's the son of Pandera. In a second century Christian writer, Origen explains that Jews believe Jesus was the child of Mary, but it was an adulterous relationship with a Roman soldier by the name of Pandera. Yeah. And so the legend came. And so what's interesting here is that historically we know that the virgin birth, Jesus being born to Mary, but not necessarily being the son of Joseph, was a belief that was held early on. And both the Christian and Jewish traditions knew this, but, you know, they come up with different explanations as to why.
Right.
So, historically, it looks like the Bible's accurate, at least in the Gospels, what we've examined last week and this week. All right, so check us out, truthrevolution.tv. Check old shows. You can donate 99 cents to us on there, or any amount if you so choose.
Right.